J'ai plumé la tête de mon alouette.
J'ai plumé la tête de la queue. Pepe, pepe, elle de zèle, vende la dolle.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Kitchen. This is Max Da Vinci and I am joined by Ajit. Ajit, say hello.
Hey, what's up?
Today we're going to talk about souring agents. This is a topic very close to my heart because I experiment a lot and likewise Ajit. And that's why we thought we should be talking about this. And so that our listeners get to explore a lot of the different souring agents that are there. People can share their own, you know, family secrets that they have. And this will be like a nice episode is what we thought. The whole concept of adding souring agents to food comes because you want to add acidity to a particular dish. And acidity does a lot of things to a dish. One, at least, you know, it brings out texture and balances a lot of the spices and all that. There are a lot of ways people bring acidity into a dish. Now, in the West, you'll see a lot of dishes just use lemons or vinegar. But when it comes back to the Indian subcontinent, apart from just lemons and vinegar, we have a large gamut of souring agents. Ajit, why don't you start off by telling the listeners something about the effects of acidity in cooking?
There are five key senses or perceptions in our tongue. One of them happens to be sour, which is obviously all about acidity. I think we have alluded to that in probably our debut episode, right?
That was our pilot episode.
Yeah. So the sourness is actually a key component of any cooking. It lends not only an element of balance in the overall taste wherever it's applicable, it also serves a fair bit of functional uses, right? So for instance, in addition to incorporating certain taste, if you look at some kind of a functional role, say, you know, a lot of these people who make kebabs and deal with meat, sourness comes from acids. And these acids also help, you know, soften some of these stiff collagen kind of materials into something softer. That's why we call it kind of tenderizing the meat with acid. And that acid obviously comes from natural sources, which is inherently related to sourness. So that's also like a functional use that sourness or acids bring to the table, pun intended. It's essentially about striking a good balance between sweet and sour. And me being from Karnataka, firmly believes that, you know, there should be some amount of jaggery in the sambar that has to be added. But again, it's about striking the right balance. So yeah, along with other elements of the cooking, you know, sour, sweet, bitter, umami, salt, all those things, sourness is a very, very important component of cooking.
Like I was alluding earlier, now you do have lemons and vinegar. Not that they are not used in Indian cooking. We do use, just that instead of lemons, we use limes. Vinegars are also used in Indian cooking, just that different regions have vinegars made of different things. Like, for example, let's start with the western coast, if you may. Because there was a lot of Portuguese and that kind of influences, they do use vinegar, but it's more made from toddy palm, right? So it's that toddy palm vinegar, and you'll find that in a lot of this Goan Christian cooking where, or the vindaloos they make, that has that toddy palm vinegar that is used. A lot of the Brahmins, right, they don't go for vinegars, but they use a lot of these berries. And one of these berries, which is a fabulous, one of my absolute favorites, is the kokum berry.
Yeah.
The kokum is this fruit and it's used as a souring agent by a lot of people. But then when you syrupify it, it becomes a sharbat for the summers. And that is, you know, majestic to have one. But since we're going to talk about the souring part of it, the kokum that, I mean, it's available in a lot of stores as well. You get this semi-solid, you know, way where they've taken out the sea, it's somewhat dehydrated, and that you could put it into dals or any other thing that you do. And I think they also sell like a powdered version of the kokum, which people can also use.
I've heard something called kokum butter as well. I'm not entirely sure what that is, but I've come across that term quite a bit. And so I'm glad you touched upon this entire diversity or the biodiversity that is associated with souring agents, right? So if we look at a lot of these souring agents, as you said, a lot of fruits are used for their, I mean, a lot of fruits are used as souring agents. So speaking of kokum, it belongs to the family Garcinia in terms of plants. And Garcinia gummigutta, Garcinia indica is your kokum. And
yes.
Also, if you think about it, of course, different things taste differently because they are different things, right? So lemon is a different fruit, tamarind is different, kokum is different. So, but sticking to the acid part of it, the reason why different things taste different is because they have different kinds of acid, right? So you look at your kokum, which is Garcinia indica. And I think we'll probably talk a lot more about this entire biodiversity in a bit. And how and where are these things found? There is another fruit called Garcinia family, but it's gummigutta. It's actually kadampoli, which is used in Karnataka, sometimes in tea and so on and so forth. And of course, you have Garcinia zeelanica, which is called Gorata in Sri Lanka. And that is very fairly unique to Sri Lanka. So this Garcinia family alone has these three fruits that are used as souring agents. The way this particular fruit stands out from other souring agents like, say, a lemon is the presence of hydroxy citric acid, which is different than the usual citric acid, right? And this particular compound is known to show a lot of health benefits, one example being anti-obesity. So you actually, in some parts, see juice of kadampoli being sold as an anti-obesity treatment. And of course, the reason for that being it regulates certain enzymes that interfere with the carbohydrate metabolism, so on and so forth. And there is another material called garcinol. This is that is also found in some of these souring agents because they are obviously derived from Garcinia species, and they are known to have a lot of antioxidant benefits. So, as a scientist, I am particularly fascinated by how are these things different, not only in terms of their physical form, but also chemically, how are they different? And therefore, what kind of functional role or health benefits they are able to provide? Because like you said, Max, one thing that we intertwined with cooking is the health benefits. I don't think we as people, you know, traditionally have just added things randomly just for the sake of it. That is usually kind of a specific reason why something is added to the other. In addition to, of course, being locally available and whatnot, there is this element of balancing various health aspects to our cooking as well.
Yeah, and it's nice you mentioned the kadampoli or the kachampoli that it's called in some regions, is because that is, like you said, is in the Coorg, Karnataka area, or the northern part of Kerala is where, you know, kadampoli and kachampoli are used a lot. And they also make a vinegar out of those berries. Now, they are used as in the berry form itself to cooking. But then, you know, I've seen a vinegarish made out of it. It almost looks like balsamic. I don't remember. I think it was a restaurant in Bombay once when I ate. And instead of balsamic on the salad, they had this kachampoli vinegar. But vinegars are not an alien concept to India either. If in fact, even in the early Vedic times, vinegar, you know, finds a mention. Just that it's not made from toddy palm because it's not considered kosher. It's more made from the sugar cane or the sweeter, you know, sources like jackfruit or sugar cane. And though it was not used for cooking, it was more used for its medicinal purposes than anything else. So vinegar is not like an alien concept to Indian cuisine. Just that, but the Portuguese brought it and made it part of the cuisine, and those dishes like vindaloo and all that, you know, popularized it and made it mainstream. And then, of course, now we have salads and things like that.
Absolutely.
So coming to the other coast, right, we have a lot of, we have different souring agents, and that's the beauty of the diversity that is there. Tamarind is used a lot in Tamil Nadu, and it is almost impossible to think of making sambar without tamarind. And that is the number one souring agent in a lot of dishes in that region. Now, you know, the way they use it, of course, is you boil it up and then you squeeze out all the juice. It, you know, it becomes the syrupy brownish liquid, which is then used, you know, for sambar and a lot of other dishes in the region. Now, another agent is also gooseberries, which also bring in that sour but also astringent taste. Am I right, Ajit?
Because the acid does leave that puckering sensation in your mouth, which is associated with both sour, and that feeling that you have left in your tongue is astringent.
You have this dry gooseberry, which is also made into a powder, which can be used. And then some people use the gooseberry as you know, as itself, just halving it or quartering it, and it's pretty popular. Another thing which people do with gooseberry is also pickling them, and just pickling them in brine, that makes it also heavenly to eat.
Absolutely.
Some of the other souring agents that we use in this region is, of course, the tomato, but it's not the reddish Roma tomato as we generally get in a lot of the supermarkets. It's these greenier desi tomatoes, which are a lot more tart, and they bring way more flavor and volume than the red ones. Red ones, I think, just give you color, but I don't seem to get a lot much taste. But these green ones are really tart, and they add tons of flavor to any dish you make. What's your preference?
I always prefer nati wherever I can, because the flavor is way better. But having said that, let us say if I'm going for say a usual dal or whatever, or any rasam or something of that sort, I prefer nati tomatoes always. And I know we are kind of digressing, but for the same reason, I also prefer the nati coriander as well, because it has way more flavor than the other kind of coriander that we get. Coming back to tomatoes, I think it depends on the purpose. Let us say if I'm making a salad, and in that case, I probably go for cherry tomatoes, because my dressing usually has the sour element in it. So it's okay to put nati tomatoes, but in that case, I prefer a cherry tomato. Speaking of tomatoes, so that's the other thing, right? So, and it probably relates to the theme of sourness. There are two types of rasams, obviously. One would be the usual rasam that is made in southern part of India with tamarind. There is one rasam called tomato saru, where tomato is exclusively the souring agent. So there is no tamarind whatsoever. Then we also have lemon rasam, which is kind of like dal that is boiled with ginger, and then you douse it with a fair bit of lemon juice towards the end. So that's the other thing, right? The way these souring agents are used is also very interesting. So of course, they provide that element of balance in the dish, but how and when these things are used is also very interesting to study. If you look at, say, tamarind, like you said, Max, we usually add the extract. Typically, this is added in the beginning of cooking, because then you get rid of the quote-unquote raw flavor of tamarind. That is usually how it's handled, if you're, of course, starting from the pulp and whatnot. But if you look at things like, say, lemon and also kadampuli, so let's say if I'm using kadampuli for making that famous pork curry, pandi curry, food, that is usually added towards the end to lend the element of sourness. Why that is, or what are the historical origins of that, I'm not sure. Similarly with lemon, right, there is a very common belief that you always switch off the stove, or, you know, you add lemon always towards the end of cooking. Again, I'm not sure how much truth there is to it or what's the purpose of that. But it's kind of very interesting to notice not only the fact that there are different souring agents, but it's also equally interesting to note how and what stage of cooking they are incorporated into the dish.
Could it be because the lemon juice doesn't do well under heat, whereas the tamarind juice, you know, it cooks up and the flavor opens up more. And especially because that raw taste goes away, but with maybe the lemon juice doesn't do well under heat, which is why always, you know, not just Indian cooking, even in Western cooking, you will see that, you know, they will prepare the fish, it's done, they take it off the grill, and that's when they squeeze lemon onto it. So maybe it's got to do with that. There is lemons and limes, right? Lemons are your oval-shaped, yellow, bigger ones, which are not that sour, probably a little sweet as well, maybe, and you could use them in salads and things like that. The limes are your small, green, mother sour ones, which, you know, if you bite into one, you're really going to have, you won't be able to keep a straight face. And both of them are used in cooking and in the various cookings based on the level of sourness that you want, and also probably from the region where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Again, limes are also pickled, in a multitude of ways, right from just straight brining to even, you know, doing the traditional oil and chili powder kind of thing. That's why, you know, lemons are so ubiquitous. And like, think about it, you know, you go to a chaat place or something, you cannot imagine having chaat, you know, without someone giving you a sliced lime on the side. Also, when you go to these places, restaurants, you know, where they will give you onions and lime on the side almost every time. So let's move to another region then. And if you go to, let's say, the northwestern region, and right? And now there, because especially the Rajasthan, Gujarat, that area, because tomatoes or lemons or, you know, these are not that readily available, they use a lot of these powders. Like, for example, pomegranate seeds as whole or even as powder pomegranate seeds. Same thing goes for even mango. They use amchur, right? And because these are easier to store, they're more readily available versus finding green tomatoes in the hot summers there. This is another one where I think like the lemon where you mentioned, just struck me, is that I've always heard that anardana, you know, does better, it stands up longer to cooking than amchur. So amchur, that's why, is more, you know, as like flavoring, is used at the end, where, you know, or samosa or chole or something, you know, they will sprinkle some amchur. But anardana, you know, is added earlier because it kind of stands up longer to cooking. Maybe it's similar to how the lime thing works. I just realized we didn't talk about mangoes at all. We spoke about the amchur, but not mango itself. And the raw mango, kairi, right? That's used in a lot of dishes, and it adds, it brings not only just the acidity, but also it has this fabulous flavor that it adds to a lot of these dishes. I think it's almost pan Indian. I don't think it's just one region, right? I can name a lot of dishes.
I mean, this is kairi panna season, which is like really, really good, and this is one of the perfect summer coolants that you can possibly imagine. So yeah, good time to talk about mangoes in any shape and form.
And one of the Kerala specialities, they use a lot of mango as well, is the Mambaya Puliseri. Mangoes are used to make this whole puliseri. That's where, again, the puli effect comes more from the mango than adding puli or tamarind itself. And
the curd as well, which is...
Yes.
Right? So, which takes us into another kind of a saring agent, if you will. I mean, curd is also a saring agent, and I think it is ubiquitously used throughout India more or less. Maybe not so much in the northeast part of country, but I think I can easily recall dishes from, say, Bengal to Gujarat or TN to Kashmir that use curd quite a bit in their cooking as one of the saring agents. So, you look at more coriander or the puliseri that use curd, and you of course have in western part of India, dahi is used very extensively in cooking.
And your kadi.
Absolutely. So you have these means to ferment. There is Gujarati kadi, there is Punjabi kadi. So obviously you use a lot of stuff in Punjab. And I think it's well known that curd is also used as a key component of, say, marinades for meat in different parts of the country. And again, unfortunately, the scientist in me is going to wake up every now and then. Just a quick nugget on what is it that's present in some of these things, right? So if we talked about quite a bit of saring agent. I think we've touched upon the hydroxy citric acid that's present in the kadam puli and the kokums and whatnot. And they have these distinct medicinal benefits or health benefits to offer. If you look at tamarind as an example, you have a fair bit of tartaric acid that's present in tamarind. And that's probably why you get that distinct taste in tamarind. Of course, it has to do with a whole host of other things that is present. Now, in contrast, say curd, it is rich in lactic acid. And that's probably why you have these different acids, which not only impart a different kind of sourness in addition to whatever else is there, but also what's interesting is that they also offer very distinct health benefits in terms of what they have to do with the body's metabolism and whatnot. which is probably a reason why these things are used selectively and not everything is, you know, lumped together in kind of an interchangeable fashion, in a random fashion, in at least Indian cooking for sure. Then of course you come to your citrus fruits, which are rich in citric acid, and it's very important to understand that hydroxycitric acid is very different from your regular citric acid, right? And as we touch upon a few other species that are used as souring agents in other parts of India, it will become even clearer that what are some of these specific acids that are not only serve as souring agents but also offer some very distinct health benefits. Another example is, I think we talked about vinegar, right? So vinegar comes from various kinds of sources. You have your sirka that could come from sugarcane, or you have your rice vinegar, you have your apple cider vinegar. There are hajar types of vinegar. What's very interesting is that, just for the benefit of audience, vinegar is essentially, you take the source of vinegar and you do a two-step fermentation. First, you convert the sugars into alcohols, and then you convert the alcohols into acids. The acid provides the sourness, but the kind of acid and the other goodies that it derives from its source also offers very distinct benefits, in addition to the taste profile, of course. Because if you see, apple cider vinegar will taste different from rice wine vinegar, which will definitely taste different from, say, the Kadampuli vinegar that we make in India, right? And these apple cider vinegar, in addition to acetic acid, so that's the other kind of acid that we have in the picture now. In addition to that, if you take apple cider vinegar as an example, it also derives a lot of goodies from the apple itself. And there is a study that has shown that consuming apple cider vinegar can actually reduce the risks that are associated with your LDLs and cholesterol levels. So, which is obviously very different than some of the claims that are being made with some of the other souring agents. So there is this huge scientific community that has invested a lot of effort in understanding through various analytical techniques what is there in some of these things that we've used so traditionally, right? Because if you look at Ayurveda, which documents a lot of these extracts in a very meticulous, systematic way, unfortunately, they didn't have like a gas chromatography that is augmented with a mass spectrometer to actually determine the chemical composition. But now what we are slowly finding is that when we do these accurate chemical analysis, a lot of the findings that we are getting today from these various analytical techniques are kind of in line with what at least some of the findings that were cited in the old Ayurveda or some of the other ancient methodologies of determining these health benefits. So that is something I just wanted to bring to the listeners' attention, which I think is kind of fun, because this whole using science to trace back to, you know, some of these original concepts, I find that whole aspect quite fascinating.
Oh, it is fabulous, Ajit. I mean, that's the whole point of what this podcast, right? a couple of nerds, and this is what excites us, that we love to cook, but then it's these nuggets of information that we find out and realize, okay, this is why it was being done all this while, not just the taste. You know, there's all these other factors that come into it. And then as you were mentioning your curd or yogurt, I was thinking on those lines, is because hung curd and curd in the normal form are both used. And they're like, for example, you have the curd, which is, you know, the watery, and the one that is used, like I said, in a lot of these curries or the mama, the pulseries, or these other dishes, more korma, those kind of ones you make. But it's also used for thickening a lot of these gravies in the Mughlai cooking, you know, in that whole UP, that belt.
Absolutely.
But hung curd also then is used for marinades in kebabs that go into tandoor, because it brings the acidity from the lactic acid that's in there.
Absolutely.
And curd also finds use in when you make bhaturas, right? And
absolutely,
that's what gives it that taste. Is it has absolutely. That chewy texture, but also that light astringency that you get is because that's what the curd or the yogurt imparts to it.
Definitely, yeah.
And then on vinegars, when you mentioned, one of the things I forgot to mention earlier, but now it struck me, is that like you said, people make vinegars from all these different sources. One of the sources that people make vinegar from, especially in this whole Punjab area, is malt vinegar. It's a byproduct of the beer process. So you have the malt vinegar, which then goes into a lot of cooking. They use that malt vinegar again in tandoori kebabs, and then for just pickling onions and lime, which is served as a side dish. So going north from there, you know, the whole Shimla, Kashmir region, they also face a very similar, conundrum to the rest of parts, because tomatoes or mangoes or things like that aren't going to grow in the hostile environment there. So what they use is the sour plums, which, you know, grow in the summers. And then that is used in the summers. It's obviously used as a plum itself, but then it's also sun-dried. And then that is used in the winter months. And that's how they get a lot of their souring from, you know, is those sour plums. Yeah. I have actually found two agents I liked a lot. Of course, you know, it is the plums. The plums are more by accident, because I bought plums. It was early in the season. They were super sour. Wife or kid did not want to eat them. So I tried making rasam with that. So plum rasam, again, tartness comes from that. And another one I found, and I use, again, it was more by accident, but I use it now a lot, is cranberries, right? Mm-hmm. Cranberries are also tart. They are rich in citric acid. So they also give you that similar thing where I use it in dals or rasams, is where, you know, plums and cranberries both give that effect. So talking about this whole Kashmir thing is what reminded me of that, is because in the cold Michigan weather, plums and cranberries are pretty useful.
And speaking of plums, I think the ones that we usually get are the red ones, right? And depending on what state of ripeness they are in, they taste tart or sweet, right? But there are green plums as well. And they are actually used quite a bit in Persian cooking. So the term, I think it's called the Khoresh Boje or something. I'm sure I'm butchering the pronunciation, but there is like a usually fairly popular beef and beef stew that is made by using this particular plum, the entire fruit, as the starting agent. So, it's really, really interesting that if we really dig deeper into incorporating one element of taste, there are literally gazillion ways of doing it, and that is really, really interesting. I think the more we kind of read, and I'm pretty sure even through this episode we are barely scratching the surface, and what we really request some of our listeners to do is if they could also share their wisdom with us on Twitter or however, and just build this rich knowledge bank for the benefit of everybody. I think that'll be really, really nice.
Another one in the Karnataka area, have you heard of this one called the Bimbli?
Bimbli, I think it is also similar to Kadampuli, but Bimbli is not Kadampuli. That is definitely different. Yes, I've heard of Bimbli, but I don't think I've had a chance to use much of it, because it's usually found in coastal Karnataka, and it looks like a cross between tiny cucumber and a lemon. But yes, you are right. That's also like a supremely sour thing that is used in cooking.
Yeah, you're right. It looks like one of those really like a completely shriveled cucumber. But let's go east. And you spent a lot of time in the northeast parts because work has taken you there. And I know because of the amount of rain they get and the terrain, they have a completely different gamut of fruits and berries that they use for to bring acid in.
So the typical term for sourness is tenga. One of the things that is used as a souring agent is elephant apple. It's called ao tenga. And this is used for making dals and stews And even in terms of chutney, it is very, very commonly used in Assam for sure. And one of the interesting things about elephant apple is the species is Delenia indica. And you will see a lot of indica in some of these things because they are specific to the region, right? And there is one specific acid in elephant apple which is called betulinic acid. And I have actually come across an article which cites anti-leukemic effects associated with betulinic acid. So again, just another example of what's in our food and what specific benefits it offers. I think elephant apple is an excellent example of that acid. The other scarring agent that I have come across in Assam, at least, is the use of mangosteen. Now, even when I was in the US, I had not really heard of mangosteen. And when I came to India and when I started seeing this funky looking fruit, mangosteen, being sold at exorbitant prices, I thought, wow, this is probably imported. I probably will desist from buying it. But I was curious about it. And until I came across one of my colleagues who is from Assam, and she looked at the picture and she's like, this, oh, we don't really care much about this. This we find lying on the streets in Assam, and you know, it's a very, very commonplace ingredient. I was really shocked. And again, this goes back to the fact that since I am not exposed much to, you know, how things are cooked in Assam and the Seven Sisters states in India, there is this portion of knowledge that I believe is relatively untapped compared to rest of the country. And apparently mangosteen is also a star fruit which belongs to this family of tengas, and that is also used as a sari agent. And I'm trying to remember what exactly is the name of that particular dish that is used to make that particular recipe. I think it's called the Thekera Tenga. I could be wrong. And the mangosteen, again, if I understand correctly, it does belong to the Garcinia family. It's a typical fruit, and in principle, it looks like it belongs to the family of the Karampulis and the Kokums and whatnot. So again, Max, this is a very interesting example of how the same fundamental species kind of adjusts itself and thrives under very, very different geographical conditions, right? Because if you look at, say, your Kerala's and whatnot, the topography, the climate is different. In Assam, it is quite different compared to, say, Karnataka. So there is this gaping geography within India itself, right? Because you usually don't find a lot of mangosteen in, say, your Orissa or Madhya Pradesh, or, you know, the central belt of the country. It's like Karnataka, Kerala, and suddenly you jump to Assam and you start getting that fruit again. So that is also, from an origin point of view, it's a very, very interesting thing to note how these things grow in...
Probably follows the monsoon, right? Because the areas that you see are all these monsoon-based. The Malabar region gets a lot of monsoon. The Assam, Darjeeling, that area gets also a lot of monsoon. And probably that's what gives... Because... Like I said, they're all in that same mangosteen genre, and they're all probably tropical fruits, which is why they grow in those regions. And because, again, of the soil and the kind of terrain they have, they are different variants, but from the same you know, family, if you may.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense.
There is one more souring agent that is used in that region. The name, again, I don't get, but it's more from the bark of a tree. Like a sorrel kind of a tree, and it's made powdered from the bark, which is also used in a lot of cooking, and they use it in chutneys and things like that.
One of the dramatic taste preference changes that happens between, say, Bengal and Assam is the proclivity towards sweet dishes. So I think Bengalis are known worldwide for having an excellent sweet tooth. But now you start moving towards Assam, and therefore, you know, the Manipur, Mizoram, Arunachal, Tripura, Meghalaya, so on and so forth. The proclivity for sweet dishes actually reduces dramatically. Well, first off, I'm very curious to know why, because I honestly don't have an answer to that. But there, even things that are supposed to be sweet are then consumed in a very different manner. Let's take, I think, tea as an example, right? So typically, tea in India at least is consumed mostly as, you know, milk paste, boil it off with some amount of water, add sugar, spices, etc. In the northeastern part of India, tea is usually consumed in as black, so no milk of any kind, and you squeeze a bit of a lemon in it, which is obviously sour, and probably a good reason why you don't add milk to the tea in that case, and then with a little bit of salt. So the taste preferences is in general towards the sour side of tea. And as a matter of fact, even if you look at deserts, there is one particular desert that stands out. It's a Manipuri desert. It's called Asimba Athumba. It's essentially either roasted sour grapes or roasted tomatoes in a sort of a tangy sugar syrup. So again, I usually don't come across deserts like this that are based entirely on souring agents and a bit of sweetness. Particularly without the use of any flour and whatnot. And of course, this to me reminded a little bit of the murabba, which is again kind of comparing the salt and the sweetness and sort of balancing it out to create a dish. But I think murabba is used more like a preserved form of fruit, say gooseberries and whatnot. But this particular dish is actually basically a dessert. And I was quite honestly boggled to know about this particular dish, that here is this dish, just sour stuff that is stewed in a bit of a tangy sugar syrup. I haven't had a chance to taste the authentic thing, but someday I hope to.
But yeah, like it is just amazing because we just did this whole almost like this virtual travel of all the regions. We started from the Malabar region, went to the side, went north, the Rajasthan side, we came to the Tamil Nadu, Andhra side, and we went to UP, Kashmir, Assam, and that is, and all these places, the thing is common. They want to add acidity to their cooking, but the sources that they find it from is so spread across. Again, there are a few like yogurt or mango, which are more across regions. But then every region has these specific ones, which whether it's because of the weather, the climate, or the harsher conditions, they've kind of adopted it to their cooking and made it their own, and they all impart very different flavors, though the primary function is the same. The medicinal properties are also brought in, and that's the fascinating part of the whole diversity, which is why when you compare to the West, like I said at the start of the episode, lemons, vinegars, and that's pretty much it in a lot of cooking. And here you could rattle off 20 different kind of berries rich in citric acid or ascorbic acid, which can be used for cooking here. I do echo Ajit's thoughts here. This is just two of us with some information that we have collected over the years, whether it's interacting with people or watching shows and reading books. But I'm sure there are a lot more souring agents or ways to bring acidity into cooking. And we hope people listening to this podcast will tweet to us and let us know so we can mention them again if we do a re-up off on the topic a few months down the line. And it'll be nice to hear from people what different ways they do, or even what are the different dishes people make. But then that brings us to the end of this episode. And Ajit, as always, it's great fun talking to you as we kind of rattle off on these different concepts that we try to bring in. So thanks again for making time, being on the episode today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Max. And this was a lot of fun.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Nerd Kitchen. We'll be back with more. As always, you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or whichever is your most commonly used podcasting platform. Until next time, this is goodbye from Max and Ajit. We'll see you again later. Thank you.
Thank you.